Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together.
I think the biggest elements of that economic change will be more opportunity for all, but that will come at a cost. So that will mean that more individuals, more companies, more businesses won't be able to compete. They'll have access to it, but they won't necessarily be able to compete. And especially if you're focused on an online business, on a business that is easy to scale, it's easy to grow, it's not that unique in a market. You'll find a lot of competition with it from all over the world. So then people, I think, eventually will start focusing back into their community. What does your community need?
Kit Yan is the dynamic head of CFO services at Outsource CFO, a leading financial services company dedicated to empowering businesses through expert accountancy, financial consulting, growth strategies, automation, and funding solutions. Kit Yan honed his skills as a financial and tax consultant at several boutique firms in Cape Town, providing solutions to both South African and international clients. Kit Yan joined Outsource CFO in February 2021 as a financial consultant and quickly rose through the ranks, assuming the role of head CFO services in July 2023. His leadership and vision continue to drive the company's mission of transforming business finance. Outside of the office, Kit Yan cherishes that quality time with his wife and friends and has a passion for travel and enjoys the tranquility of the great outdoors. And thank you so much, Eden, for being here today. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I'm just so curious, what motivated you to pursue a career in finance? And how did those early experiences shape your professional journey?
Yes, I think my journey started here in South Africa, born and bred, lived in Joburg for a while next to the Kruger, then moved up north. And my dad was actually in finance as well, a lot in marketing and procurement and in different entities and companies, and eventually moving into a central place in Cape Town where I had the opportunity to be a more helpful to different entities, you know, to work with different entrepreneurs, with founders, with co-founders, and actually having the vision and the traction to see what is happening on the ground, how the people are developing different products, different elements, and how I actually found a lot of value in that. So I found that contributing more in worth to, you know, to the community and the service and to the economy really helps, I think, fuse my vision. I always ask people, you know, did you ever wanted to be in finance or as a CFO? And I actually started as a young person trying to analyze everything that I could with budgets, especially with my dad. So it was, I think, a kind of a growth phase for me when I journeyed into this and studying into finance and getting involved with different businesses, consulting as such, and just, I think, getting the atmosphere of, you know, what is a business? How does it work? And how the journey goes for each individual.
Absolutely. And I love that you have that experience so early on, because a lot of times when you're just exposed to things, you start to absorb it. We're like sponges when we're babies and as we grow older. But the fact that your dad was already in it too, it just gave you more of a solid foundation and being able to kind of see these different things and different elements that you might have not seen had you not grown up around that either. And I'm really curious, how did your time at the various boutique firms that you worked in at Cape Town prepare you for your role now at Outsource CFO?
I think one thing that we worked with Outsource CFO is we've got something called the financial hierarchy. And the first level of that is just accurate basic financial information. You know, if that is missing, then most of the elements that build up on top of that is really, I think, null and void. And I think working with different individuals and firms, I think just gave me a little bit more base level So it gave me a place where you can fall back onto and know that, hey, these are the different elements that are applicable in a certain situation, in a certain business. Really depends on industries as well. So working with different, entities from the US and South Africa involved in tax, seeing different countries all over the world, how they manage those finances, how they manage the taxes, then eventually going into more in-depth financial consulting or elements of more, I'd say, financial management point of view. It helped me a little bit, helped me more explore what is the actual need of entity. So I think it really sets up that base level for myself that I can actually, delve up into and actually explore further.
Absolutely. And that's so interesting because you do work with international clients. So I'm sure all the financial aspects are so different based off of country to country. Like here in America looks really different than South Africa. Have you had that like difference or any challenges when it comes to the differences per country?
Yes, I think the first difference is your culture. It really depends on how you grew up, where you came from. So your kind of expectancy of what is business, what is type of work that you would like to do, what are the different industries. So, after getting through that culture barrier and trying to get elements where it actually aligns with each other, then it was great at seeing different entities, how they work. Especially in different in countries. So in Africa, we helped with a few accelerators as well. We managed startups to actually just set up ground funding or angel funding. And then you can see the difference in just in tonality and the way that they act, the way that they pursue certain things is vastly different between different elements. So it's so interesting to see. We've got one entity looking for, growing different elements and scaling up 10x, maybe with a ground agency or something like that. But then you see a tech-enabled African startup who has maybe two or three employees and they want to, 10 or 100x. Their attitude is different. Their outlook is different. They try to align differently. So it's really interesting in comparing those two elements where it's the same company, it's the same business, but you're aligning it in different ways to actually scale. And there's different metrics that you also issue between the two. There's different things you look at. There's different people that you work with. And everything at the end of the day is not a, one size fits all. So I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned is, you can have one entity do one thing in one certain way and someone do the exact same thing with the exact opposite of it. So, having that visibility and knowing that if you're not adaptable enough in a situation, then you might not lead into the way that you're actually wanting to go. You might not reach that end goal. So it really depends on the different elements in the different countries. Also, your community. So if your market is different for one company in a different element, so you can't target the same, end customer perhaps in one setting than another setting. So it really is small nuances in between different elements, which is, I think, the most interesting things, but also challenging because you need to learn and adapt and you need to find a way to maximize their growth and their potential without imposing too much on what you think is best from your point of view, but seeing what the market is more aligned to.
That's so true. Like just even thinking about like the culture factors that might be really different. You could have two businesses that are so different in the delivery because the individual is different. Their idea might be similar, but I'm a firm believer that everybody has unique gifts and how they deliver it can be really different, even if it is that same foundational aspect of a business or the type of business, how it is put to the world, basically. But I love that you really focus on it's not a one size fits all and really just learning and knowing the nuances for each business, how they're different and how you approach it is different, even on a financial side, because it looks really different in South Africa versus maybe France versus Germany versus America. So like all those factors play such a big part. And I think that's a really good lesson to learn and understand that you can't really judge a book by its cover. You kind of have to take a step back and see what is best for each business and their vision and their goals of what they want to accomplish. And with just transferring from when you were a financial consultant to now head of CFO services at Outsource CFO, what was that transition like for you?
Exciting and challenging at the same time. It is a big step up when you're managing certain elements in different entities and managing more a function in itself of CFO. So with outsourcing CFOs, basically managing different elements of clients' needs, providing solutions to problems by way of highly educated people, people that have so much experience in different industries, in different companies, and leveraging that talent towards an ultimate goal solution for the client. So I think the transition is there's a lot of business in aligning different entities and aligning one. I think you can, it's more like a macro to micro scale, but still the elements of it, there are quite similarities between them. So you need to make sure that you don't over-leverage, you don't focus too much on certain elements, adding maybe a set bar graph that you have your certain areas of expertise that you have and your elements of the business that you manage, and making sure that as your business grows or as you need to service different elements of it, you scale up certain elements and you create a little bit more, I'd say, value to certain sections so that you're managing your expectations within the division and the department as well as with the client. So, servicing clients in that sense, in providing those type of services is really, really pivotal, I think, in ensuring that the needs are met for yourself and for the client. And I think the biggest difference is, going from a consulting business into consulting for yourself, into consulting within a team, leveraging those skills as well that you had with, into communications and various technical skills that you need to bring in and develop, I think, inwards. Because a lot of the companies that you can service and cater for, if it's manufacturing or it's fintech or it's SaaS companies, then you have to bring in into an agency and more workable solutions and different metrics that you need to measure, working with hours, trying to create value instead of just churning out time, is to more pivot it towards a different style of thinking. So I think it was quite a growth phase for myself in the transition, which was, as I say, exciting and a big endeavor, I believe.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said like about managing expectations, and when you're consulting for yourself and then go into another company, it's just understanding the metrics and how that can really function and look different for everything you're in. It's really being flexible and adaptable. And I think those are two words I've really been working on this year for my own stuff. But I'm just curious because I know you do a lot with leadership, you're the head of it. But I'm really curious, what are the key qualities you believe are essential for effective leadership in the financial services industry?
It's a great question. I think there's a few. I have books and I have different tables and sheets that has all the different elements. We once had just a quick session on how many different aspects you need to focus on or make sure that's there. And you can mention like 115, right? We got to that. So then we're like, okay, cool, this is great. So we need to just assess the probability of this and assess the actual impact of each of those. And then you get to a pretty interesting metric where you align probability of this happening or this needing to occur with the impact if you have that type of quality in yourself. And one of the top ones to you was adaptability that you mentioned. If you're a finance leader in a role, especially if you're going from small, medium enterprise, growing and scaling into large enterprise, if you're in a certain situation where I can attain for myself, sitting 7, 8 years ago, nothing I did then, I'm doing now. Like the amount that it changes, that you need to adapt, change in that environment. So you need to be very, very quick on your feet. And not as something in David Pullman's book he mentioned, one very, very critical thing is you need to be able to abandon certain systems and processes. If you're too attached to certain things that you get used to because this is what works for you, you're just creating a little bit more effort for yourself. So if you've got ABCD, ideally you want to go ABD, right? You want to take out processes and systems. You want to remove time. You want to increase efficiencies. And to do that, you need to be able to let things go, right? You need to be able to be adaptable. The technical side and knowledge experience side, I think, are pivoting more to information side. So the fact that, AI is evolving at such a rapid pace that the knowledge experience you can easily get from, just a type in your pocket, one sentence, and you'll find that experience, right? But how you adapt to that knowledge, how do you use it? How do you enhance your services to a different individual? And how do you qualify leadership within a team is also very, very crucial. Just to speak on leadership for a moment, great leaders are those who have found one thing that they do is they not just lead by example, but they give the opportunity for you to also lead. There's a lot of the board that actually helps and encourages more responsibility, more decision making. You don't want to be at a certain level where you're holding everyone's hands or you're cross managing or just like not cross serving, you're cross managing certain individuals or staff and not giving them the time or the freedom to better their own way. And because we work with a lot of founders and entrepreneurs, really cool thing is that we can take some of the juniors, the people that are full of life and like just experience from a younger age or just liveliness, if I can say as such, they can use their entrepreneurial skills to actually develop themselves. It's something that I think you still need to constantly adapt and learn. And to give the opportunity for them to do that without boxing them too much in certain elements so that they can expand. Because a lot of the entities and companies that we worked with, they either go out horizontally or they align vertically. And a lot of the companies that we see with a little bit more horizontal leadership and a horizontal, point of view, working together with each other or other on problems instead of working against each other or aligning it down. I once worked for a company long, long time ago, consulted on, which had, I think it was about 16 or 14 or 16 lines of management. And it's very difficult to actually get things done. So as soon as you're at that level, you must, I think, ensure that you either departmentalize in a sense that the effectiveness doesn't go, that you can start metrics that calculates that effectiveness, but also that you manage your staff in a way that you're encouraging and empowering them instead of, pulling them down.
I love that. I'm just like thinking all the things you said. There was so much. The biggest thing is the adaptability, because a lot of times it's hard to shift something that has been working in the past, but you have to move with the times. You have to kind of shift things, like, of course, do what works, but just being inventive and the innovation that happens, that evolution when you are building a business and if you want to scale it or keep it around. Just like when people were like, I don't want to go on social media. Now it's like a must in order to have a business. You need at least a website or some kind of social proof, I guess you could say. But it's just adapting with those times, because a lot of mom and pop shops that have been around for 30 years and are like, I'm not going on social media. We're good. But that, speaking to that point, it's so difficult for some to really shift. And I know I'm the same way. Like, I have a system. I'm like, okay, the system works for me. But this was probably almost a year ago. One of my coaches was like, Caroline, you need to change your thing, like your process. I was like, okay, fine. But it took me time. And that's why I think it's important what you brought up. And just even with the management, having clear communication, where if there's like a line of 16 different people that you're reporting to, how can you make things really easy for everybody so things don't fall through the cracks? Because it's really easy if you have a lot of people and not everyone knows what they're doing, where they need to be in that capacity, especially financially, because like numbers are very exact. You can't really make mistakes on that. And just with,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
absolutely. And I think it's just even how the dynamic of the world and the market has changed. We were just talking before we started filming of just how the economy has shifted and inflation and just what it looks like here in America versus South Africa and other places all over the world. How do you approach financial consulting and growth strategies for businesses in today's dynamic market?
I think having a controlled mindset, having a deliberate mindset, while keeping your adaptability in place, like making sure that it's there in your pocket when you need to use it. I think in a certain economy that we're sitting in with, there's a lot of opportunity. And what they mentioned, what I read up a few days ago, is it's an abundance of opportunity. And the problem with that is most people now have access to different elements in the economy. They're bringing more people into it, right? So they've got more access to most things. And that's what the government is trying to do. And I think most areas is to just to increase the economic value add of people within it so that they can grow with it, right? They don't want to take it out. And because of that, it creates a little bit of a market. Like obviously there's a market that now has more supply than demand. And that sometimes leads into some recessions and sometimes. I think the intuitive feeling that you have is if certain elements in an economy is struggling, you can quite see that, especially from a consulting point of view, because we've got, I think, various ideas and we can track various metrics of companies, with having that financial information available. and we can track different industries, have different benchmarks. So we can actually see, you know, some of them are really struggling. Some are really in a place where they need to heavily pivot into a region where they need to really try and either turn 180 and look at something else, try and pivot into a better strategy. And I think looking as a consultant for those entities, seeing that if there's a perception where we need to enable different entity work, we try and alliance with their goals, even if it's backing down or turning out, because we try and help even the one if it's going great. We usually don't hear from them because everything is going fine and they're on the up. But there has been times where it's really going too quick and you scale too quick or you grow too quick and you don't leverage enough and you've got too much risk and you don't actually, you know, cater for the rest of the company or the growth or the compliance and assurance and different elements of that, especially when you've got more focus on profit and cash and revenue, but the rest of your elements aren't really growing in line, then something can fall down really quickly. And I've seen that before. And I think the economy just kind of nudges more in the direction that the economy was moving. So with the election, you know, our election's just passed. I know yours is coming up as well. Very volatile. Expect different things to happen. I think they're suggesting that a lot of change will come, especially with the integration of technology over the next 2 to 3 years. So I think the biggest elements of that economic change will be more opportunity for all, but that will come at a cost. So that will mean that more individuals, more companies, more businesses won't be able to compete. They'll have access to it, but they won't necessarily be able to compete. And especially if you're focused on an online business, on a business that is easy to scale, is easy to grow, it's not that unique in a market. You'll find a lot of competition with it from all over the world. So then people, I think, eventually will start focusing back into, you know, their community. What does your community need? And I think it's a good place, especially in different countries or countries like South Africa, is to focus more on how can I help my neighbor? You know, it's not just my neighbor, but the individuals around me. And how can that larger community help the rest and then can help send it on forwards? And so it's a very interesting place. A lot of ups and downs. We are kind of in the middle of everything because we sometimes need to alleviate and help grow different founders. But we're also on the opposite side. You know, from COVID's time, there's a few retrenchments that happen that we need to service and help out with. So just from the compliance side, but also from the strategic side, it can go either direction. And sometimes you need to make sure that you don't throw it all away by trying too much or not focusing on your goals, especially. So it's a very difficult, I think, place to be at. But interesting. So as this opportunity is there, you just need to be able to find it and capitalize on that.
Yeah, it's looking for the possibilities that are there versus focusing on obstacles. And I love that you said the opportunities that are available. Because you're right, I think a lot of businesses are having to shift with just automation and how technology has moved so fast. Every day, it feels like there's something new out there. But what role does automation play in your financial consulting services? And how do you see that evolving in the future?
We actually have and I think most people, most entities will have this, but aligning a strategic artificial intelligence and automation function, like a subhead, on just trying to see the trends, because you're trying to see where the puck is going, right? You're not trying to catch it. You need to be where it's landing. But then it might be a mile further than you expected. So one of our steps in the financial hierarchy is automation. And we even have an integration department, because a lot of finance processes are based on tech. It's in technology, software, and tools. And even though you could have the financial experience to know what they are, you need certain individuals and specialists to, first of all, implement those tools to make sure that they're working correctly and aligned with the business, and then automating in the sense that aligns with the strategic goals of the company. So automation, I think, just from a base level, accurate basic financial information, should be aligning all your information. If you've got a client-based business or product-based business, wherever you've got a metric that you can calculate or track, you should be able to automate that tracking system, first of all. I think data is sometimes more valuable than a result, right? If you have that data, you can analyze and then predict and then maybe make decisions on that data. And then automating that function into a service. One of the metrics that some companies use, it's very, very, I think, powerful from Mr. Mark Woodbottom, He said it's just basic revenue per hour. If you measure your revenue for a month and you work 12-hour days, but if you then you've got that metric. But if you half the time, you make the same revenue, you double that metric. So actually increasing your life's value, the actual inherent worth of an entity is not to just work harder until you die, right? You actually want to work less. So it's a really interesting metric. And if you can increase that metric or track that metric, revenue per hour, you can still reduce your time. And reducing time is just increasing effectiveness. And I think there's nothing wrong in these days in telling someone, hey, this is a problem you have. We can provide a solution. What is that solution worth to you, right? And you bring in, even if you have to bring in time, like most people or contractors or anyone do, they bring in time, they calculate, they value it. Sometimes we suggest, okay, let's take that time out. We got the value. You know exactly what you need. This is what we can get you. From our point of view, this is worth this, and from your point of view. So you're in agreement with that. And then you can start automating things eventually. And as soon as that service improves, you're creating efficiencies for yourself and for the business that you're servicing. So you're automating that function, whatever function that is. Even if it's in a service providing function, you can increase that with automation tools. And then from your basic accurate financial information, you eventually evolve to more compliance. You go into advanced information, cash maximization, looking profits, looking strategic directions. How can you automate those processes in order to set up an entity or a function or a department or a division, can even be a team to be more efficient? Because ultimately, I think it's better to get to a certain level of efficiency than it is it's just chasing revenue, because there's more worth in cross-selling. For instance, if you're cross-selling, what I usually call in individuals or companies or entities, than just chasing revenue the whole time. But increasing efficiency, you work on a leverage system where you can actually double it without, decreasing work. So it's a very interesting metric to use automation in these functions, especially on delivering services to clients, delivering like value adds to them, but providing it at a certain level. And obviously the market will fluctuate, and the market will have more supply of this. Thus the demand will decrease and the value will decrease and the price will decrease as well. But I think the goal where you deliver efficiency, but still deliver it with excellence.
Absolutely. I think that's the biggest part of it. And I love that you brought in just like having that time for yourself. If you're able to automate things, you have more time to be efficient, to use the time that you want to for leisure, with your family, traveling, other things. But how do you integrate your demanding professional life with personal interests like travel, outdoor activities, spending time with your wife, all of those things?
Yeah, very, very important. Me and my wife are avid travelers. We had quite a lovely time traveling through Europe. South Africa as well, I think, is a beautiful country to explore. But we went a lot of places we still want to go. My wife, she worked in the East as well for a time. So it's very difficult in this day and age, because I think we grew up with an older generation, with my parents, having them work a lot. They work long hours. And sometimes it equates to working hard is delivering more value. It was actually like work hard, and I don't think don't work hard, work smarter, I think came after my parents retired. But I don't think that nuance is still as important these days. One of the values of OCFO is family matters, and we need to make family first, right? So if you have a certain family and you can't cope with certain work elements, it's most likely being integrated into both areas, right? It's either coming in or out from your personal life into your business, into your work. Equating that equation, if I had to bring it back to finance terms, is you have to make sure that you are aligned with your family values and that of your position and your job. And what they expect from you isn't so irrational that it takes everything else from you and that you're unhappy. So what we try to do is we've got like mental wellness days that you can take, more than enough leaves that you can actually take away. We have more open communication with anyone in your team that you can, share different aspects of what's going on in your life, having daily check-ins with them, not to just be too cold, but actually caring for them a little bit more, which makes it much easier to cope with the work. And I think it's quite important these days is to not, try and butcher your employees in a certain sense where they are creating value for you. They are servicing you and different people that you're servicing into clients. They also have families. They have problems, and they have issues at home, or they've got something that they missed because they needed to work. So just realizing that in a sense, and then they take enough time off. Make sure that you can align your goals, your personal goals, with the companies. We've got some of the employees or the consultants. What they do is they work off site. So that means we've got people that worked in Bali for like a few months, or they travel to Europe and still work in certain time periods, so they can basically still add value to clients and delivery, but still have a time off or travel a little bit more and actually experience a little bit of the world instead of just staying. So I think the hybrid situation is a very, very good benefit, you know, from COVID, and that actually realizing the workplace. I know a lot of clients are bringing their staff back for efficiencies, and that has obviously been a question, but there's positives and negatives to that as well. And a lot of people or consultants that are really skilled, they're looking for versatility. They're looking to be, you know, more free in their workspace, you know, more freedom, so they can decide what they want to do with their spare time and not sit in traffic, because it really demoralizes someone if you're sitting even in Cape Town, which is like an hour and a half if you want to go into town. So you're sitting 2 to 3 hours of your day lost in time, and then your time equals to value is really decreased. So your efficiency decreases. So I think that a lot of entities are trying that. A lot of them succeed, a lot of them fail as well. It has to have a little bit more control, and it has to have lots of trust for the employees. So make sure you get people that you work with that service you, that you can trust. I think that's the number one thing to have in individuals.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because you're right. Like, I know when I was a therapist, I would have to drive, or even just other jobs, it was like an hour sometimes just with LA traffic when I lived in California. A little different here in Colorado, but the fact is, I think the time piece. So when you're driving, you're not, like, you can still be productive in some capacity, but it's so different when you can have that freedom and flexibility. A lot of times mentally, we're just more equipped to do more because we can get it done in a faster time. It's more efficient. Our work is better because we have that mental health aspect where we're doing things that we need to, but we're also taking care of ourselves, because I think it's shifting here. So many more companies are making employees go back to the office when a lot of people love being able to work from home. COVID shifted everything. I mean, I've been an entrepreneur before that, but still, like, I don't know if I could ever go back into an office at this point, because I like that freedom. And a lot of people like to travel and just have time the way they want it, but still being productive. I think that's the key element there. And I'm curious, what advice would you offer to people that are aspiring to become entrepreneurs or financial consultants looking to make their mark in the industry?
A lot of consulting, especially in financial consulting, it plays a lot on your different strengths and weaknesses. So if your time management skills aren't that great, it really picks on that. And I think with the modern day and age, we've got so many more things to do in one day than you usually did, you know, just a few years ago or 10 or 20 years ago. So the fact that now you can have meeting on meeting on meeting and deliverable on deliverable, or expectation on expectation on expectation, managing not just your own time, but the client's time and the client deliverables. Because again, when you're consulting, it's not you being involved in a team and you're working there for 6 months, perhaps with one goal. It's some microtransactions as well. And it's trying to get the best value for that entity. So it's short wins, which is, I think, great for a lot of people. They don't want to sit in a company for a long period of time. The average trend is between 2 or 3 years, you might move company. So it's not so that you get the 10 years that often anymore. So with consulting, that really accentuates the fact that you could do that. You could have gained experience in an entity, and you work maybe a 1 or 3 month or 6 month contract, which is great. And you align the experience, you align with the company, and that's great. You may want to continue with a longer contract or employment, maybe for a year or two. But having a consultancy where you have to service different elements of different industries, of different companies, of different tasks, it is time consuming. But it is fun, and it is actually enthralling. Like, I love the experience of the learnings. Like, when you get to be in certain situations over, you know, 1, 2, 3 years consulting, so then you learn a lot. You learn very quickly. You learn some in the good way, you learn some in the bad way. But the experience gain, I think, is amazing. I think what might probably be difficult to do this for the next, 30 or 40 years. So I think eventually, the older you get, the more you want to, settle down in a certain thing. But I think for young individuals, and especially how the market trend is going in professions, is aligning more to have particular people do particular things and just setting that up for you personally. So, like, really go and know yourself. And if you're maybe a bigger risk taker and you can handle a little bit more intricacies or changing times, then it's great to actually have a consulting position. If you're more aligned with secureness and stability, then it might not be for you. So it's really something personal for each individual to consider.
Absolutely. That's a lot of great advice there. And I think it's just also looking at, especially the younger generations, to really explore opportunities because I have a recruiting business and, well, kind of still have it, but a lot of that I would see a lot of resumes and a lot of people would be jumping to like so many different companies. But that's become the norm because you get the experience, and then a lot of people are like, okay, well, I want more pay or I want a different experience or whatever it is. But I think every experience just lends to that knowledge piece. So then you can build upon those skill sets and transfer it to each new opportunity or venture that anybody wants to take. But I think it's just so many aspects of that. And I'm just curious because I know you've been with Outsource CFO for a while now, and heading into the next 5 years, what do you see the company's goals looking like?
Great question. We've got something we call a BHAG. That's big, hairy, audacious goal. And what we have and what we cater for with the founders that started the business is to empower 1,000 finance professionals and service 10,000 entrepreneurs or clients. So that's actually a big, hairy, audacious goal that we have with certain quarters that we align with every 90 days on how do we get to the next step, dragging down to weekly deliverables and daily action points as well. So I think that is the ultimate goal in service because you have to have a very clear vision, and like with OCFO's vision on, creating world-class finance function for entrepreneurs and scaling entities and to actually delivering that with excellence and having strategic and, quick thinking and switched on thinking for different individuals and companies and entrepreneurs. We try to help the economy in that sense, because at the end of the day, even if you're doing something very basic for a company, that person is providing for his community and that is empowering him to be something for someone else. So I think just having that vision in mind, a lot of vision casting, going back to, even though this is what I'm doing today, it's not the most fun thing ever. If you do some fundraising accelerators, that's great to work with the entrepreneurs. But sometimes you have to do the back end and you have to make sure that everything is in line. So then just taking it back and realizing, hey, this does mean something more than just what I'm doing right now, so that I can actually feel empowered. And eventually, getting to a place where we can service multinational companies with different individuals, having that outsource capacity and trying to align and match with the talent that we have so much. Especially from a financial point of view, there's a lot of talent in South Africa. We've worked with talent in the UK and in the US as well. And matching that with the need of clients, because a lot of clients think there's opportunity in a certain section of the world, and they don't realize how much more worth there is with different individuals, especially on online service-based businesses. So there's a lot of, I think, value add that we can bring, that we want to bring to companies all over the world.
I love it. And you're doing that. You've been doing that and will continue. And I can't wait to see what the next 5 years looks like for you guys as well. But I've been so enjoying this conversation. Eden, where can people find you, find your services? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yeah, you can look online. We've got the website at fo.com. We're also online on LinkedIn. You can find us there and you can follow us on all the social media pages. And yeah, give us a follow, send us a mail if there's any questions or queries. Happy to respond and see if we can help in any sense.
Well, thank you so much, Eden, for being here today. It was such a pleasure. I loved everything that you had to share, just so many insights with the industry, especially the financial aspect, because I think it's something that is always evolving, the economy, everything that we need to be looking out for as well. But what you're doing to automate and just make financial aspects more digestible for people all over the world.
Thank you so much to you as well, Caroline. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Eden today? I'm sure he would love to see that comment, and we'll see you on the next episode.